This is Helen Zaltzman, and you're listening to Best Frequencies Forever.
Good morning. You are listening to TV on the Radio here on BFF.fm. I'm Leah, and I'm here with Jess. Good morning, Jessica.
Good morning, Leah.
How are you?
I'm good. How was your Christmas?
It was delightful. How was yours?
It was great. I did a lot of yoga.
Yeah, yeah. I got two bags of coal this year. but that was We've Killed More for Less by Motel Beds. And we started our show off with this because we're going to kill you all next year. No, because that was Jess's most played song of the decade, right? Yeah,
at least according to my iTunes library. I mean, I guess I haven't been listening.
Does it feel right? All right. Good morning, everybody. You were listening to TV on the Radio. That was a little recap of our best of the millennium or best of the decade or, I don't know, best TV ever show that we played. Yeah. So
if I'm not out of breath. You're out of breath.
If you guys missed that, feel free to go back and play it. It's in our archives. I had a little door issue today, so pardon my tardiness, but I was also teaching a sex education class before I came here. So we are talking today about season two of Sex Education, which just got released on Netflix on January 17th. When where are we? And I binged the whole thing. How about you?
I have missed like the last 30 minutes of it.
Oh, so close.
So it was spoilers for me.
Oh, Jess. That's where the town blew up. So sorry. Sorry. They were all nuked out of existence. That's how sex education ends, you guys.
Just when everyone learns how to have sex.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Well, bummer.
Yeah, I think we both really liked season one of Sex Education. My husband didn't like this show for some reason.
Not at all?
I don't know. He's repressed, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, I sympathize with that a little bit. By the end of this season, or almost the end, I was just like, I'm exhausted of watching awkward sexual encounters.
Yeah, yeah.
I could be done with this.
If I never see someone else masturbate, it's going to be too soon.
God, I did not have a sex positive upbringing.
Yeah.
So damaging.
Yes. Very true. Very true. Yeah, no, my husband doesn't particularly care for this show for some reason, and I really like it.
I think
that we talked about season one and how we felt that it's just like a bracing, refreshing view of teens. I think it's interesting that they had to set that in England in order for that to seem believable. But
we'll talk about the setting, and I'm sure we did last time too. But the setting is a little bit fantastical.
Yes,
you know, like, yeah, it's sort of
Aldovian, these sequestered teens in this beautiful valley.
It is, but there's also, I think, and maybe this is, maybe I'm wrong, or maybe it's because it's a co-production between Netflix and presumably a British TV producing company.
Yeah.
But it
a little outfit like called the BBC.
Is it BBC? Okay. Yeah. I never remember. But their high school is very like American,
yes,
right? Like,
yeah.
And
we did talk about that last time, and that has been a deliberate choice of the show, yeah, to make it kind of an amalgam between British high school and American, okay, high school, British secondary school, should I say. Yeah, nobody wears uniforms.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about that.
Well, they dress uniformly crazy.
Yes. Yeah. I don't know what kind of boutique is available, yeah, in this, right, tiny little valley town, but it is.
It's fun.
Very avant-garde, high couture. Like,
for
love
some
it
reason, I was thinking about this in comparison to my so-called life.
Yeah.
Just thinking about the teen shows that I grew up with that are, you know, more representative of Generation X.
Mm-hmm.
And this show's obviously very different. Like, everyone is open. Like, my so-called life was about the things that were left unsaid because you don't know how to say things as a, yeah, teenager. And these kids just communicate all of their feelings.
Yeah.
And I was thinking, is this, because I do think there's a fantastical element to this show,
mm-hmm,
a little bit, not like anything supernatural, but.
I mean, the dragons were,
right,
they were a little out there, but.
But I was wondering how much of that is a choice to make this like not realistic the way 90s shows tried to be more realistic, or if that's just a general generational difference. I know kids talk about their feelings more than, yeah, we did.
Yeah, I was interested in that too, because I do think that this show has extremely like body positive, sex positive, gender positive, all like it's not judgmental about anything. Mm-hmm. And there is an element of our bodies ourselves, we're all okay,
yeah,
to it that seems unsurprisingly not preachy, or surprisingly not preachy, I guess.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I was wondering the same thing. I was like, is this they're trying to shoehorn in all these positive messages, or is this truly how kids are nowadays?
Yeah.
That it is all a spectrum.
Yeah, because it did feel to me at points a little bit like, not an after school special,
yeah,
but like an educational video we would, yeah, have been made to watch.
Yeah.
Because they do get so clinical and like, and it's so strictly like non-judgmental.
Yeah.
But I do think there is something like different for the kids these days. There really is, I think, a effort to verbalize the things that, you know, we didn't verbalize.
Yeah.
You know, to try to, you know what I mean?
I do. And
like to try to,
talk about sex.
Talk about baby things and not stigmatize things. And I think, yeah.
I think
it's like the talk in these days.
Well, there's certainly a level of maturity that was not present,
right,
in my high school,
yes,
at least with anybody I knew, that is refreshing.
Yeah.
And we talked about this a little bit with regards to Euphoria,
mm-hmm,
how this generation has basically been born with like a looming threat of annihilation effectively,
yeah, uh-huh,
and how that has to change you. Mm-hmm. And I think if it's changing people in positive ways, such as talking about your feelings, talking about that one feeling and being open sexually, that's,
yeah,
only for the good. And it's too bad that we ruined the planet before they have a chance to realize.
The town exploding at the end was actually more of a, like, kind of a brilliant extended metaphor.
That was the real after school special. They got the chlamydia outbreak under control and then it blew up. but one of the things that I do enjoy is that for as much clinical, extremely graphic sexual portrayal and sexual discussion that happens in this show, I feel like they have really captured a universality about being a teen mm-hmm. and being in these situations that you're not prepared for, either physically or emotionally or I don't know, just... Yeah. I never went to a teen party that turned into an orgy where everyone took off their clothes. But
still waiting.
Yeah. But I do think that there's a sweetness that they capture about yeah. that burgeoning hopefulness. And it really, really, season one and season two really brought home to me how formative your initial relationships are mm-hmm. over the course of your life. And it's so true that my damage is predicated on some 15-year-old fucking idiot who didn't know what he was doing. And you carry that with you. And I think that they just captured the way that teens are so cavalier about these important things that feel so outsized to them, but yet are, you're just constantly hurting people as a teen.
Yeah.
Feel like this season explored that a lot more. I thought it was interesting. Season one focused on Otis, who essentially became a sex therapist at his school, mm-hmm. Helping all these kids with their sexual questions and issues. And he was unable to masturbate or be sexual in any way because his mother was a clinical sex therapist yeah. and overly shared and had mm-hmm. made it weird. But in season two, he has gotten in touch with his sexuality and...
Yeah, that opening montage in the first episode, yeah. I was just like, oh boy.
Yeah, same. I was like, he's just going to be a long 8 hours.
Yeah.
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 There
was... no, I won't get us off track. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
There's a scene later where these girls who are all kind of at odds with each other and are trying... end up bonding over the number of times they've encountered an unwanted penis.
Yes.
You know, like just been flashed or groped on the bust or some like awful thing has happened. And I thought that made me think back to the opening montage of watching Otis Master
4 minutes
over and over again. I was like, I feel assaulted. By
yeah.
that. I didn't know how to articulate it at the time, yeah. 7 hours ago, but now I'm.
Unsolicited dicks.
Yeah.
That's how you can. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I guess I did choose to watch the show, but
well, I also think it's interesting. I'm sure intentional that season one Otis was extraordinarily sweet, very measured, very considerate, very just a really great kid. And for a lot of season two, he's kind of a dick.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that is absolutely true.
Right.
that is absolutely your experience as a teen. When hormones kick in, that rules your life. And
right.
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. I mean, he becomes extremely self-centered and yeah. Which is true of a lot of teenagers. And a lot of the show and the sex positivity is about people communicating and checking in with your partner and, you know, just considering the person in the room with you besides yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess maybe that's the thing I wonder if it's realistic. Like, are, I mean, just yeah. because like it's great. Maybe teens are becoming like less self-centered because
yeah.
they've been given the language to like ask people questions and communicate. And maybe, I don't know, are they better people? I still think they're probably assholes.
Yeah, I do still think they're probably assholes, but
we should have gotten a teen for this episode.
At least they're, yeah, because there's nothing better than forcing a teen to talk about sex with two adults in the room.
That's fine.
I'm sure the teens.
It's about communication.
Like communicating.
This is
with
a
themselves.
Safe space.
Yeah, absolutely.
Studio A is a safe space.
We're just taking very detailed notes about everything you say.
Is Dr. Jean a terrible therapist?
I think
like, she's
maybe.
A clinical therapist who sees patients, but then when. She's talking to these kids. She
hangs out in the school all day.
Yeah, I mean, the plot's a little thin. But I mean, she goes right, like, you know, she goes right to, like, maybe you have a fetish. Maybe you're asexual.
Yeah.
And it's like,
yeah.
Maybe you should just let the kids talk and not immediately diagnose them with something.
Them. Yeah. Yeah. There was a lot of use of the word therapize in this show, which I was pretty unfamiliar with. Yeah, I think that, as I said, the show does kind of walk the line between being this very adult, sex positive, conversation, communication positive piece, mm-hmm. and still highlighting the fact that these teens are still teens who are, you know, you're on the cusp of all this burgeoning relationship stuff that you're going to have to deal with mm-hmm. for the rest of your life, and just not knowing how to navigate that is portrayed really well, I thought. I also think that the show did a good job at showing the universality of you are so ruled by your emotions and by your experiences that you hurt people, even people you really like.
Mm-hmm.
Ostensibly, Otis really liked Ola, his girlfriend, mm-hmm. and there's a love triangle between he and Maeve and Ola. That isn't really resolved, but I think the show does a good job at walking the line between being sweet and being sort of clinical and sex positive.
Yeah, all the characters are lovely. It's, you know, full of quirky weirdos.
Yeah,
it's very funny.
Yeah, also the most open small town in Britain. I mean, that's, I'm to believe none of these people voted for Brexit and have no problem with immigrants. In this tiny, tiny town. But yeah, I'm into it. The setting is truly gorgeous and bucolic.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that adds a lot to, as you said, the sort of fantastical nature of it. Because it feels like this very isolated little place that...
Yeah. In, like, I don't want to harp on the wardrobe, but the wardrobe is crazy.
Yeah.
It's very, like, intentionally 70s looking. Mm-hmm. Except for brighter colors and like Dr. I don't know why I keep referring to her as Dr. Jean. Dr. Jean's home is like clearly styled like the 70s down to her like ceramic tableware. And it feels, I don't know what my point was with that. And even the casting, maybe this was styling, but there were some of the male characters who had these like long faces and like kind of exaggerated features that just looked like 70s guys to me, you know, like, there's very strong aesthetic. But yeah, it's very pleasant. It's the opposite of Euphoria, you know?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. One of the things, Euphoria really brings home the intense sort of sadness and kind of darkness that permeates
the trauma.
The inherited trauma exactly that all these teens are dealing with and that hangs over them like a pall even in their sort of hedonistic search for pleasure. And when we were doing our roundup of TV, I was thinking the Euphoria was like, it's so hard to be a teen, and Sex Education was my glimpse into like, oh, maybe the kids are all right.
Yeah.
Like the kids are going to be okay. We don't need to worry. I mean, we do, but the kids are going to be okay.
Yeah.
So there has been some controversy this season about Eric and Adam mm-hmm. Groff. Adam Groff in season one bullied Otis's best friend Eric relentlessly for years and years, and then ends up giving him a blowjob in a very aggressive way after having spit on him. And and in season two, he is sent to military school. He ends up getting kicked out of military school, comes back to this small town, and starts back up with Eric again. Mm-hmm. Eric has now found Raheem, the French...
the perfect boyfriend.
The French perfect boyfriend who is far too open for these British people. No, nobody's ready for you. Too soon, son. Raheem and Eric are out and expressive in public, which is new to Eric. And he's still sneaking around with Adam mm-hmm. at night. And there has been some controversy about the way their relationship resolved, which I don't. Did you see the part in the last episode where
I don't think I got to how
it ends with Adam running through the town and breaking into the auditorium where the school play is happening and declaring his love for Eric. Aww. Well, not declaring his love for Eric, but telling Eric he wants to hold his hand on stage in front of everyone. And then, of course, Eric does it and Raheem storms out and cries in front of the auditorium. But there has been some controversy about kind of the messaging around that. In season one, for me, every time the Adam and Eric story was shown, I was like, oh, this is absolutely going to cause weird fucking hangups for Eric.
Yeah, but I mean, isn't that true of your first relationship no matter what? I mean,
yeah,
for the most part.
But then when you have it modeled in like a healthy way to have it be that, I don't know. I mean, my true experience is that you absolutely will always go back to the guy who treated you like shit. That's my lived experience as a teen, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw a tweet today that said, me at his place, him saying, stop telling your friends about us, me to my friends. And then he said, us. He referred to us as an us, which was definitely my experience as a teen. As a teen, I was like, on his way to his girlfriend's house, he said, thanks, Ryan. obviously, we're faded.
Yeah. I loved the Adam character. I think his performance, he's so, maybe it's just his face, but I really like, there's sort of an understatedness to his performance.
Yes.
He comes across also, as so sad, but I don't know.
Also has some real comic turns.
Yeah.
Like the physicality of, I was going to say the physicality of his body, the physical things that he can do. Mm-hmm. He's very tall, very strapping. And there's one scene where he sort of folds himself over the counter and goes back and forth.
Unexpected.
Yeah. It's just strange. And then him taping the price stickers to his all over his face and then spitting them out really really quickly. That guy is a very funny physical actor, and I would like to see more lightheartedness from Adam Groff in season three.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah. He does convey a very, very buttoned up, deeply wounded person mm-hmm. with not the character's not verbal, contrary to all of the other teens who are constantly talking about their feelings and their experiences, and he does not have the language or the tools to do that. And so he conveys a lot through his physicality of his body.
There was also, so he works in the convenience store mm-hmm. and there's a dog that's literally penned up in the closet.
Yeah.
It was like episode 7 where it's like, oh, the dog's about being closeted. Yeah. I don't have to ask Leah to explain this one to me. I got it.
An animal metaphor. Nice. Yeah, and it's actually a good dog who can follow orders, much like Adam Groff. I do think that was a great performance, but I am a little torn on whether or not, again, my true-to-life experience is that you do always go with the guy who treated you like shit. And no guy who treated me like shit ever made a declaration in front of the school. So
yeah, that's a very classic teen show thing mm-hmm. is the declaration.
The grand gesture.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's talk. So there were some new characters introduced this season. Mm-hmm. Delightful, every one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, except for Dex, who can
suck a pack. Okay. Did you notice when they go to the game store, the nerd fantasy store where he works? So Viv can flirt with him.
Mm-hmm.
He's wearing a polo shirt backwards.
I did not notice that.
Okay. Well, if anyone understands what that was about. Please tweet at us. We're BFF TV on the radio. He's the one who I thought had 70s face.
He definitely has 70s face. He was in Game of Thrones.
Oh, really?
As a 6-year-old petulant ruler and then came back in season 7 as that kid. And everyone was like, hey, Prince, whoever, where have you been for the last 12 seasons? But I think that kid has a rubbery, weird looking face. I do not find him attractive.
I mean, I don't really find him attractive, but he's, I don't know. He's like, he's in the category of
the hot, ugly
faces that I'm attracted to. Yeah.
Sure, sure.
And I think that's probably from a formative experience of watching like 70s TV when mm-hmm. I was growing up in the mm-hmm. 80s. That character was somewhere on like Welcome Back, Kotter, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yes.
And it messed me up, guys.
Yeah, that's really, I mean, I just think about that where I'm like, oh, we're all walking around carrying these terrible experiences we had when we were idiots. And why do we think that anyone who caused us to feel pain was anything less than an idiot?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you really should absolutely have all your formative experiences when you're old enough to take it either for a grain of salt or recognize that this is something I should lean into.
Part of having like not a sex positive upbringing, mm-hmm. And I understand teens are going to have sex.
Yes.
Maybe not all of them.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, like just not doing anything with anyone in high school is, you know, I saved myself
valid
some trauma.
Yeah, absolutely.
I didn't have any of those gross sexual encounters and I would not go back and have them if I had the choice.
Yeah, I absolutely. That's the thing. I think that nobody that age should. It's really unfair that your hormones hit when you're absolutely not ready to deal with it on
but
any
if you
level.
Feel repressed or anything like that in high school, you can just go with it. It's fine.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
plenty of time.
So many sports and everything right now. We're living in a golden age of TV. I mean, just stay home and watch TV every night.
Enjoy
Don't
your
worry
PS4.
About any of these knucklehead 15-year-old boys who are going to hurt you, whether or not they want to, because they just can't help it.
Yeah.
What else did you enjoy this season? It also ended with a cliffhanger about Dr. Jean. Not really a cliffhanger.
Is she pregnant?
She is pregnant.
Okay.
She's pregnant. So.
Otis is not going to take that well.
Yeah, never know.
I guess he could hook her up with the morning after pill.
Yeah.
It's too late.
You have to buy that yourself.
I learned.
Pharmacist couldn't sell it to anyone without a uterus.
Can you imagine Yakov holding a baby and him smiling?
Okay, Yakov. Yakov has the most menacing vibe.
Yeah, when he smiles, like, and I think it's just supposed to be a genuine normal smile, I'm like, that guy is for sure going to murder you.
Yes, you are absolutely going to end up built into the walls in his ramshackle cabin in the woods.
I understand there was an intentional choice to cast him. He's supposed to be kind of dour and, you know, a little bit menacing, but he has to have been in some sort of like Scandinavian noir television show.
Oh, absolutely.
Show or something.
As the accused who may or may not have killed the person, and it's, you just don't know.
Yeah.
He's super creepy, but there is a nice scene in the last episode where Otis genuinely apologizes to him. Otis ends up having a realization that he has been a dick for all of season 2, basically, and tries to make amends to everybody. And the very end of the episode is about Isaac and
Maeve.
Isaac and Maeve.
Do they make out? I'm into Isaac.
They do not make out.
Ooh.
But Isaac and his brother have moved into the trailer park across the way from Maeve, whose mother has come back on the scene, former drug addict. And then there's a question about whether or not she's using again. The brothers break into the house to find proof. They they find a kit and Maeve calls Social Security. I'd like to take somebody's Social Security number, please. Call Social Services, and the mother and her half-sister are taken away.
Okay.
Maeve goes to Isaac, who he's in a wheelchair, so he sits around kind of spying the whole time. He's getting the lay of the land and is obviously interested in Maeve, but is a very winning character.
Yeah.
Very, very sweet. Alarm bells went off for me in one of the earlier in one of the earlier episodes where he was talking to Maeve about, he said, we were both abandoned and nobody else can understand that trauma.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That makes us special. And I was like, this guy's a fucking weird abuser, because that is like classic isolationist type shit. And then at the end of the episode, Maeve goes to talk to him and she ends up going to the grocery store, get some ingredients to make them dinner. And Otis shows up, of course, mm-hmm. and Isaac tells him that she's left and he doesn't know when she'll be back. And then Otis says, oh, okay, tell her to check her phone, where Otis has left her a declaration of love. And Isaac listens to it and deletes it.
Ooh.
So that's how it ends. And I had some questions about that. I was like, is Isaac awesome or is he a super fucking abuser? And secondly, these hyperverbal, very communicative teens, it seems strange to me that you would leave a declaration of love for somebody on a cell phone and then just never follow up with that again if they don't bring it up.
I don't know. I wouldn't bring it up.
But that
I would just assume the silence was the answer.
But it doesn't ring true with their experience of friendship.
Oh, right, right, right.
I think because last season Maeve had feelings for Otis. She didn't tell him. And this season, obviously, he's with Ola and he's happy. And she does tell him that she has feelings for him. And it, of course, fucks him up and mm-hmm. all that. But in the end, he has a whole declaration of love. So let's get to the Maeve, Ola, Otis,
mm-hmm.
whatchamacallit, triangle, love triangle.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that Ola was correct to tell him that he could not run a sex business with Maeve anymore?
I mean, this show, I think, relied on a lot of teen show tropes, which mm-hmm. is the, like, I don't want you seeing her anymore.
Yeah.
And that's, like, that's as predictive of being the loser in the love triangle as, like, when you're on The Bachelor and you tattle on someone for not being here for the right reasons. It's like, you are going home tonight, honey. So, yeah, that's always, it's a classic unappealing thing to do. I mean, I wouldn't want my boyfriend hanging out with someone who looked like Maeve, but what are you going to do?
Yeah, running a sex, whatever.
I guess that didn't come up for me in high school.
Yeah, same.
I didn't date anyone as entrepreneurial.
Sure. Sure. I didn't say your jean jacket patch business with your hot has to stop. Yeah, I think, again, for me, I was like, oh, well, that's, yes. With the benefit of hindsight, you know that that's never going to go well when you deliver an ultimatum as a teen. I do think that that's a normal part of teen relationships is testing your power to a very specific degree. But again, some advice for the teens out there, if you're listening, never ask a question you don't know the answer to. So don't ever give somebody an ultimatum unless you're 100% sure that things are going to fold your way. Because Otis actually did acquiesce and tell Maeve he couldn't see her anymore. Mm-hmm. Then Ola broke up with him. So, you know, everybody's a loser in that situation.
Yeah.
Really. Ola and Lily were friends. Lily was the weird girl from season one
whose wardrobe was truly upsetting to me. She really takes it too far.
It's a little batshit, but she's, and that's the other thing too, is that everybody in this tiny town is absolutely accepting of everybody who is, I mean, this chick's into like space penis fiction. Right. That's her main interest. And and everybody in this town is like, oh, that's Lily. She's just fucking weird.
Yeah.
And nobody, everybody is so accepting of it that it's, yeah. I feel like she might have had a little bit of a harder time as a teen.
It's like Adam's the only bully in town. They got to get a couple more bullies.
Yeah.
There's a lot of kids who need some bullying in this town.
Yeah, yeah. Also, Jackson is the ideal version. He's the, I feel like the writers are working something out with their experience of jocks in high school, mm-hmm. and they're making this guy be an actually nice, woke kid who just wants to please everybody and and doesn't necessarily act that out in super destructive ways other than self-harm. But, you know, I mean, that's really not that bad considering all the terrible things you can do to other people when you're a teen, you know. Yeah.
But back to the Ola Lily thing, I don't know if it was meant to be read this way, but like Ola just like kissed her close friend like without consent. And I thought that was weird.
Yeah.
And I
thought, she did say, I'm going to kiss you now.
That's not asking for consent.
Okay.
That's what Louis C.K. says before he takes his dick out. I don't know. I thought it was weird. I thought Lily's reaction of being weirded out by it was totally normal. Mm-hmm. But then like her, I mean, and then she's like, all right, I guess I'm into this. And
yeah,
it's like there was, I don't know. I feel like the show treats everyone's specific sexuality with a lot of respect. But then Lily, like she was into dudes and space tentacles or something. I don't quite remember.
Yeah.
But now she's okay with her female best friend planting one on her.
Yeah, it's also,
but I guess that happens, right? The teens are all fluid now.
Yeah, it also just felt strange to me that I was like, Ola, meet some new people. Like Otis was the first person she met in town and Lily was the second. Like I don't shoot your shot too early. Like there's a whole town full of glorious weirdos for you to potentially make out with. It seemed a little pat that this relationship was the only other person we ever saw her with. And so, of course, that's who she would end up with.
Also, when she like decided that she's pansexual and she defined that as like, I'm in love with the person, not the genitalia. It's like, fuck you, bitch. Like, do pansexuals think they're better than everyone?
Yeah.
Like,
And yes, they do. No, I don't know. I don't know anyone pansexual. I'm sure I do. This is probably like people who are like, I don't know any gays. probably know.
If you want to come out as pansexual,
feel free to tweet at us. Show. Yeah, we're at BFF TV on the radio. So I agree with that assessment that everybody's sexuality is treated with so much respect that it's like, okay, we should maybe ask a few more questions before we blindly accept that Lily is cool with this. Did you get to see any of the space version of Romeo and Juliet?
No, I'm very much looking forward to watching that. I could tell by the lead up that it was going to be the climactic, not to miss event.
It is glorious.
School year.
It is perplexing to me how they have a budget roughly the size of Hamilton, it appears. And I don't know who those costume designers were, but it was truly something.
Must be where all these people moved to the school district. It's very well funded. And
yeah, again, that's the thing. So this entire town is sitting there. These teens are literally wearing vaginas and penises on their heads as costumes. And everybody in the town, Mr. Groff, of course, gets up to stop this because it's ridiculous, which he has a point, I have to say. And all the parents are like, we're enjoying it. And I'm like, really? Come on, guys, open your eyes. Maybe it's just that all the parents are so repressed that they don't recognize that their kids are just constantly surrounded by genitalia.
Mm-hmm.
I'm confused. But yes, I would love to. Lily produced and directed the show, and she clearly has a future in the theater.
Yeah.
It was a tour de force. And I was very, very into the portrayal of Romeo and Juliet.
All right.
As told through penises and vaginas. Let's go to a song, and when we come back, we can talk a little more about Sex Education series, season two even. Oh, wait, maybe not.
No song.
And then, sorry, just...
That's okay.
I'm logged out of my...
Should we talk about what our quiz team name is going to be?
Oh, yeah. So they're... Yeah. So the quiz heads didn't really go anywhere after all that. I mean, they won nationals, but but that seemed like, I don't know. It just seemed weird that you go to nationals and then that's it.
Well, it's kind of like being a cheerleader. There's nothing for you after high school if you're on the quiz team. There's no professional quiz team. Only a few people go on Jeopardy.
Yeah, I feel like in Britain, though, that's not true. There are
A
million quiz team.
It's a profession there. I've literally never even heard of quiz team.
Well, there are a million panel quiz shows in Britain. Like, oh, it's really? Just quiz shows all day, all night, all right. basically. That may be a slight exaggeration, but you could probably make a living going panel to panel on a quiz show.
Okay. Well, I was thinking for our team, Quiz and Dick. Or Cheese Quiz.
Yeah, oh, nice. I like Cheese Quiz.
Strictly Quizness.
Oh, nice. Nice. You came up with, yesterday we went and saw Busy Phillips as part of SF Sketchfest, and you came up with Quizzy Phillips, yes. which I like.
Quiz Ahmed.
Nice. Yes, I would absolutely pay homage to Riz Ahmed with my quiz name. Yeah, I had a few names too. Quizzy Phillips, then Quizzy.
Oh, that's good.
Getting quizzy with it. The quizzes are all right instead of the kids are all right. That seemed a bit of a stretch, but, you know. I will say also, I think all of the teen performances in this show were really, really great. None of them are teens, but I think all the people who played teens were really awesome in this show.
Everyone was really funny. Yeah. I really like, Eric? What's the girl who got sexually assaulted on the bus? I forget her name.
Amy.
Amy. She's so funny.
She's hilarious. And... I thought that it was realistic that she was riding the bus and some guy masturbated on her mm-hmm. and she panicked as he would and got off the bus and nobody intervened.
Which checks out.
Yeah, absolutely checks out. But I also thought it was very, very true that she came to school very cavalier about this fact and just accepted that this was something that happened and didn't realize that this was assault and that this was a traumatic event until Maeve forces her to go to the police and mm-hmm. relive this. And then you see it played out over the rest of the season that she's truly traumatized by this. And it culminates in all the girls sitting in a weird detention breakfast club like situation. It was very clearly styled to be like that with them on different couches and things mm-hmm. and them walking out of the school.
Oh yeah.
They all had to talk about their shared experience of being female and what they had in common, and they couldn't decide on anything, even liking chocolate, which seems unlikely. But they eventually all land on the fact that, yes, they have all been subject to unwanted, unsolicited dicks mm-hmm. over the course of their then 16-year-old lives, but which is true, of course. But also, it rang like so clear to me that mm-hmm. that is so many women's experience of assault that they have experienced over the course of their life that it's not that bad. It's not. It's this constant, constant minimizing, and sometimes you need somebody to say, like, that sucks, and that's fucked up, and I thought that it was worthwhile to portray that in a way that is realistic. Mm-hmm. Also, again, because these teens are so good at communicating and verbal and all that, it wouldn't ring true that... I don't know. I found that the conversation about like, oh, wait, we've all like been assaulted in some way or another. Like, I'm sure that would have come up at some point. Right.
Like, I don't know. I mean, because they resented being there and having to participate in the exercise in the first place. So it makes sense that it took them a while to come around to actually having an honest conversation.
Sure. Sure. I did really like the part where at the end, Maeve absolutely owns up to trying to steal Otis by telling him about her feelings, which of course is what you're doing when you're a teen and you tell somebody that you like them. You are hoping that they will drop everything else in their life and say that they like you too. So, props to these teens for being very grown up. Let's play a song, and then when we come back, we'll talk some more about sex education. If I can find, there's Ox One. Okay.
You're killing it.
Thank you.
right. Welcome back. You're listening to TV on the Radio. That was Ezra Furman's cover of the LCD Sound System song, I Can Change.
Great music in the show.
Yeah. Both season one and season two have awesome music. Should watch it for that alone.
Yeah.
So let's talk about Otis's house party for a moment.
Oh, God.
Just like every Bacchanalian house party that I've been to.
That was, I thought, really well done because mm-hmm. I think sometimes those like house parties that get out of control, it's, I don't know, there was an element to this, like his like drinking and grossness was mm-hmm. so cringe inducing.
Yeah.
Like really just painful to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was good.
Yeah, it was. It was really well done. And seeing Dr. Gene walk in the next morning and then like reviewing the devastation in the house.
There's like one of the pillows on her couch burning. Was on fire.
Yeah. But
oh God, and that kid who was still there and he was just in his underwear.
At his hand down
weird
his pants.
Fucking
yeah.
Risky mm-hmm. business ass looking yeah. kid. Yeah. He also had a weird 70s face.
He did have a weird 70s
face. He had gray hair too.
Maybe. Maybe.
The show, man.
But that ended with Otis, being absolutely smashed, being a total dick to both Maeve and Ola in front of the entire party, mm-hmm. and then sleeping with Ruby, who's the shallow, mean girl in the school, mm-hmm. I guess. And he had talked about how he always thought that he would lose his virginity to somebody he was in love with. And I thought that was also the perfect teen experience of waking up next to somebody and being like, oh, fuck. Yes, guys, you only get one first time, but there's also only one second time, one third time. So, you know, that clock resets. Don't worry. I thought that it was, I'm not going to say brave for the show to do that, but I thought it was interesting. That was unexpected. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's not that you think in these type of shows that it's going to be, that everything's, the stakes are so high for a kid like Otis with something to do with sex that you do think it's going to be this like deeply meaningful thing and you
or
show
like
him
at
develop
least an awkward but tender.
Yeah.
Scene.
You show
I'm
him
so
develop.
Glad we were spared that.
Yeah. You show him develop these sweet, you know, very, good relationships with women and then ending up getting totally trashed and just banging the hot girl in the school. I thought that was really great. Yeah. I was very, very pleased to see that. And then afterwards they couldn't find the condom, so they were both freaking out. And mm-hmm. she also had a very funny scene where she said they were standing outside the chemist and she said, I'm not going to have your unusually pale, very long children. and just the way Penta's body was very
funny.
Yeah.
I also liked the she says, like, when I'm sad I make out with nerdy boys mm-hmm. because they think they're in love with me and it feels amazing.
Yeah.
It's like, checks out.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, when she was getting the morning after pill and she said, don't tell anyone I was here. And the pharmacist said, I have no idea who you are. And she said, of course you don't. Everyone knows who I am. Just highlighting the narcissism of teens. But they kind of did shoehorn in there how she said it was really annoying that he was asking for consent every 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And he was like, well, it's important to check in. And I was like, okay, here's another lesson. Like, you always have to check in frequently, like with consent, you know, consent and blah, blah, blah. But then she said at the end, she said, you know, thanks for checking in, though a lot of guys don't do that. And I was like, that's perfect. Like, that's all you need to say to address that. And yeah, I mean, consent and checking in with your partner was definitely not a thing when I was a teen. I also like how Raheem, the French, like, very open, very advanced kid, is like, if you can't talk to your boyfriend about douching, you're not ready to have anal sex. And I was like, Raheem, you don't talk about those kind of things with your partner.
Like, never.
Yeah.
Not when you're in love, not when you're married, not ever.
Yeah. So God bless them if the kids are
different.
Yeah. If the kids are just open about everything now. It can only be for the good, right?
I think some things, like, there's a there's something to keeping an air of mystery about some,
sure.
some things. But I guess not if it's at the, you know, peril of your feeling safe and.
Yeah.
Or, I don't know. Yeah, whatever. If you want to talk about douching with your partner, that's up to you.
I certainly have never, as a teen, it was not the norm for people to talk about A, their feelings or B, consent or anything like that. And yeah. I truly, in thinking back in the earlier part of my, you know, life, I guess, sexual history, whatever, I don't know. I don't think any guy at any point was ever like, is this okay?
No, I mean, okay? I remember actually when that became like a national conversation about consent and like, it was a huge joke. Like not for everyone, obviously, but like that was part of the narrative is like, oh, what are we going to do? I'm going to have to ask you before I kiss you. Like, do you have to sign a contract? But it's like, that's how it was discussed at that time. Like, you know, the mid 90s or whatever.
Fuck those guys. Yeah. Screw all those guys. Yeah, because, you know, it's a thorny issue, guys. It is better to check in with your partner.
Yeah, I mean, can't hurt to ask.
Yeah, I mean, recognizing somebody else's bodily autonomy when your hormones are arriving is or surging or whatever is, I don't know, probably the most humane thing you can do. So just showing a little consideration is, sure, appreciated. Yeah. Would be appreciated, I'm sure. What else do you want to say about the kids?
Nothing. It was good. I recommend it. I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, I have to say, with the very harsh opening of an extended masturbation scene, I was like, ooh, yeah, this is going to be a bit of a
As
track.
I said, by the end, I was tired of watching teens have awkward sexual encounters, so... Happy to be done with it for a while, but if there's a season 3, I'll for sure watch it.
Yeah, I was like, ooh, this is going to be a trek. But then I did end up watching 5 episodes the first night.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I was definitely invested in seeing what happens. I will be invested in season 3 to see what happens. There's obviously going to be some fallout from the Otis, Maeve, Isaac love triangle.
Mm-hmm. I didn't really pick up on the Isaac as an abuser subtext, but I'll be interested to see where that goes.
It really hit, just the nobody else can understand your experience. Mm-hmm. I understand you and we're special. Like, that's a real red flag.
Yeah.
Again, teens, if there's anything you can take away from this show, don't ever fall for anybody who tells you that you're special because you have something in common with them. You know, it's a real weird isolation thing. Yeah. Also, I'm not trying to say that having a traumatic abandoned childhood doesn't, I'm not trying to discount anyone's experience.
Also, all teens do like bad things and treat each other badly. It doesn't necessarily make you an abuser, but.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I have a quick recommendation. If you haven't watched Leslie Jones's new stand-up special on Netflix, I watched it the other day and laughed my ass off.
Excellent. It's
very funny.
I'm finally going to start Cheer. So,
maybe we'll talk
about that next week. I feel like the Cheer Hive is a real thing.
it's good. It's really something.
Yeah, people are very invested in that show. Okay, let's end with another song. Do you want Love You So Bad, or would you rather hear that Mystery of Love from Call Me By Your Name?
Love You So Bad.
Yeah, same. Screw you, Sophia. okay, let's end with another Ezra Furman song. He features heavily on both season 1 and season 2. Yet another recommendation for Sex Education season 2. And thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with more TV on the radio. Keep it here on BFF.fm. Indie Rock Girl Radio is coming up next. And my song is...
You know I love you so bad. I don't believe in love. You know I love you so bad, so bad. You know I love you so bad, like the kid in the back of the classroom who can't do the math 'cause he can't see the blackboard, so bad. You know I love you so bad, like the kids skipping class in the bathrooms.
nights mom got drunker than dad did. She told me never hang out with the bad kids. Well, what can you say to that? I always knew I was bad. Always dreaming, so they called me the spaceman. You first kissed me in your parents' blue basement. Wanted your baby so bad. Sometimes we got out of hand. We bought drugs from a parking attendant. Open nights in your car would transcend it. Loved you, baby, so bad. You know I loved you so bad. So bad. Somehow you got yourself.